Welcome to David Maister's Business Masterclass, a series of advanced business seminars exploring principles and practices for success in professional businesses.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this seminar, entitled Why Merge, I'll discuss the pros and cons, mostly cons, of trying to achieve strategic advantage through mergers. The track record of mergers amongst professional businesses has not, to put it mildly, been impressive. Although few mergers have been proven disastrous, just as few have clearly delivered the competitive benefits the companies sought. Mergers can be successful, it's just that few of them have been. For a merger to confer a competitive advantage, it must create an additional benefit for clients or customers, not just for the companies involved. This simple principle seems obvious, but it's not always observed. For example, many companies justify the merger on the grounds that we can refer clients to each other and increase our revenues. Well, that may be true enough, but that could be done without merging, and it's good for you maybe, but what does it do for the client? What added value do the clients or customers get from intra-company referrals rather than referrals between companies? Obviously, not much. Although referrals do flow between merged companies, if not in the quantities they dream of, neither company can be said to be more valuable to its clients competitively strongly than before, just because there are more people in the company. What might be the benefits to the clients or the customers of a professional business merger? Consider five kinds of mergers that I refer to as the menu, bulk, dots, alchemy, and crisis mergers. We'll discuss each of them in turn. First, the menu merger. The menu merger attempts to create a competitive advantage by adding additional services to the company's service offerings, thus aiming to provide to the clients or customers a broader range through effective cross-selling. Does this work? Well, maybe, but here's a simple test. How successful, historically, have your cross-selling efforts been pre-merger? If you've already got a good track record of cross-selling the services you already started with, then your ability to capitalize on selling the new services will be higher, and maybe you should go for it. But if you don't already have a pre-existing track record of cross-selling your existing services, and most professional businesses do not, then what makes you think you'll be good at cross-selling the new stuff when you haven't been able to cross-sell the old stuff? The one-stop shopping supermarket approach has been tried in numerous businesses and professions. It was a hot strategy for a long time, but it's been discredited almost everywhere. However, maybe some of your clients or customers would appreciate it. The simplest way of finding out is go to the horse's mouth and to ask. Select a group of the clients or customers to whom you think these new services would most appeal. Invite the group to a dinner and say, "This is confidential, but we're thinking of bringing on some people with additional specialties." You don't have to tell them it's a merger. "Please, beloved clients, would you tell us what's your reaction? Would you find this appealing? Would you use us in these new services?" You don't have to accept all of their answers as gospel truth, but you'll get a good temperature reading on the market reaction to this initiative. It's amazing how infrequently companies conduct this simple activity, even when contemplating transactions which involve millions of dollars and hundreds of people. I am offered in my role to look at firms' competitive strategies. They try to hire me to evaluate it. And my first question is always, "Well, what do your clients say about your strategic plan?" And they look back in horror and they say, "Clients? We haven't shown our plan to our clients." And my response is, "Well, they are the only ones who are going to pay you for the ideas it contains. It either appeals to them or it's useless. You don't need the view of the idiot from Boston, David Maister. What you really need is the views of your clients to your strategic ideas." Notice that there are really two issues here in all mergers. Whether clients or customers would value the benefit you seek to create, in this case having an expanded range of services, and whether a merger is the best way to accomplish it. Let's Let's look at the second kind of merger, the bulk merger. Bulk mergers are based on the theory that you have to be big to be credible. They are defined as mergers between similar companies in the same locations where the theory is that by getting bigger, the company will be better able to compete. A big company, it is believed, has the resources which enables them to handle large assignments or projects that a smaller company might not, or might not be able to convince the marketplace that it can handle. It is also hoped that a big company will have a greater market presence and will be included more regularly on clients' lists of professional firms to be considered. Now, it cannot be denied that size helps in marketing. However, it's a poor substitute for it. Market credibility and being invited to propose with great frequency are goals that can be achieved through quality and effective marketing. Merging to achieve market credibility is like taking a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Companies that are interested in bulk mergers are in effect saying, "We're not sure we know how to get better, so we'll get bigger because size helps a little." Of course, increasing size does not necessarily lead to greater profitability for professional businesses. Few of the things that determine a company's success, client service, innovation, quality, productivity enhancements, collaborations, none of these are dependent on size, and in fact, many of them are compromised by it. Companies can and should be working on these topics anyway, long before they look to size to solve their problems. No client or customer will be fooled into thinking that when two medium-sized, okay companies merge and become a giant, okay company, that they, the clients or customers, are going to be better served. Clients are not dumb. We should work on the assumption that clients are at least as smart as we are. A small company can be as profitable as a larger one on a per senior officer basis, if not more so. The key to improving profitability in a professional firm is to improve the quality of the business, obtaining better paying, more leveraged, high fee engagements. If this can be done without scale through marketing, innovation, client service, or creativity, then size becomes optional. Conversely, if bulking up just means more of the low-fee, less-leveraged projects, then profitability will probably decline. As the old saying goes, volume is vanity, profits are sanity. Let's turn to the third kind of merger, the DOTS merger. The DOTS merger describes combinations of similar companies in different geographic regions. Here there's an attempt to gain a competitive advantage by adding locations, thereby offering regional, national, or global coverage. There clearly would be a client or customer need for the multi-location company if the client or customer had work that needed to be conducted simultaneously in multiple jurisdictions, as, for example, much audit work for multinational companies requires. The ability to handle such multi-location work simultaneously provides an inarguable rationale for end-to-end mergers. However, the vast majority of client or customer work in multi-location companies does not require this kind of simultaneous joint activity by locations. In many situations, each location is winning and serving its own clients. Why then would a client or customer want its provider to be multi-site? There might be a case where a client or customer may prefer to deal with one company for particular kinds of work, but may not want to spend time and money flying professionals around. Or a client or customer may want its regular domestic company to have an overseas office for some ongoing business. Of course, nothing appeals equally to all clients or all customers or all prospects. Some of your clients will find what you are planning attractive, and others will be indifferent. It's important to know the needs of specific clients or customers up front. You need to research which individual clients and customers will benefit from your planned initiative. It's not enough to talk about what the market wants. Many mergers have been motivated by a misguided desire to be everywhere. Opening or acquiring an office to balance out the map in the company's brochure isn't justification enough, although it's remarkable how often this ends up being the prevailing rationale. My experience is that few clients consider geographic coverage to be a significant consideration when selecting a professional business, except in those rare instances that we have discussed when there is work to be performed simultaneously in multiple jurisdictions. On matters of any importance, the client wants to identify the individuals in each jurisdiction who can serve them best, rather than simply taking whoever is assigned to their professional company's remote location. They generally believe, as clients, that they can choose the right experts in different business areas for themselves. I remember interviewing a Dallas, Texas client on behalf of a big accounting company that was trying to promote its international tax services. The client said, "I wish these companies would stop coming in and showing me a map of the world with all their dots on it and thinking that's going to impress me. Treat me like a sensible adult. The fact that you have a senior officer in, say, Paris, to whom you can refer me if I have a French tax problem, actually adds zero value to me. As the client, I don't have difficulty finding a credible tax advisor in Paris. Intra-company cross-referrals may be good for you, but they don't do anything for me unless you can show that I can derive extra benefit from using your person in that other location." "What could that benefit be?" I asked. "Well," she said, "what I need is not so much international companies as international people. Give me someone here in Dallas who can talk sensibly about European community law. People like that are relatively scarce and hence are valuable. Or convince me that your company's standards of quality and service are so rigidly enforced that the mere fact that you are in partnership with this person guarantees me a high level of excellence and responsiveness." She went on, "That has rarely been my experience. What you get from a company depends on the individual you get in each location, and the fact that they were referred by a colleague guarantees nothing." What all this client feedback indicates is that the mere existence of multiple locations is not worth much to clients or customers. It's what you can do with your multiple locations, your ability to run the collaborative firm and enforce company-wide standards, that determines whether or not the geographic expansion benefits the clients. For example, some geographic mergers have greatly enhanced the company's ability to serve clients. They did this by enabling practitioners in specialized business groups from multi-jurisdictions to meet regularly, to collaborate on joint projects, share knowledge, and develop joint training. Thereby, they really did enhance the capabilities of individual practitioners in each location. This was equivalent to creating international people. The activity that created the merger benefit is the effective functioning of the multi-site business group. Merger benefits can be brought to market if and only if new ways are found to collaborate and enhance capabilities. This teaches three important lessons. First, geographic merger benefits are most likely to occur at the business group level rather than at the company level. Second, the capturing of major benefits is primarily about creating new capabilities and not primarily about marketing. Third, the effects of merger are almost always different for each of the business areas within the firm. What might appear to be one merger is in fact a series of separate mergers between the subunits of the company, as each business group tries to wrestle with how it can create new capabilities by using its new combination. Next, the alchemy merger. Alchemy mergers are based on the expectation of synergy, that famous word. By merging, it is hoped the company will be able to create something new. Let's acknowledge immediately that this can be done. In fact, as difficult as it is to do well, this is the most powerful of all merger types when it occurs. A perfect example of this approach is the creation of multidisciplinary businesses. In those parts of the world where regulatory barriers do not exist, this movement is well advanced and flourishing. An example is given by the many employee benefit consulting companies, who have traditionally provided design, analysis, and advice on benefit packages, but have often had to turn the work over to law firms to get plans registered, in compliance, filed, etc. In the future, with Alchemy, they could have the in-house capability to handle all aspects, and the flow of work to law firms could dry up. Of course, it's not only the law firms under attack. They too can and have taken the initiative. Many law firms, particularly in the US, have successfully built multidisciplinary alchemical businesses in such areas as healthcare consulting, environmental consulting, international trade consulting, real estate management consulting, economic research, and computer software development, all based around the law firm. Other alchemical approaches can be seen underway in the consulting market, where corporate strategy consultants are furiously trying to get involved with the implementation advice in addition to being information technology or sole strategy providers. Ultimately, these attempts to bring together multiple disciplines and fuse them into something new will transform the competitive landscape in which these companies compete. However, companies will not do so merely by bringing these different specialists in-house, whether through merger or hiring. The key added value from the client's or the customer's perspective will be the ability to design, coordinate, and integrate a variety of diverse specialties. This will place significant stress on companies as well as challenge their abilities to manage a completely different beast than the one they are used to. Another way to think about this is to recognize that on complex transactions, clients or customers need a prime contractor who will take responsibility for the total job, including the management, coordination, and integration of a variety of technical discipline specialists needed to do the total transaction. The question then, which we will explore in a future seminar in this series, is who credibly possesses the project management skills essential to be the prime contractor? Many companies have merged or acquired their ways to bringing multiple specialists in-house. Few have convinced the market that they have created a seamless integrated service. Finally, the crisis merger. One of the most common types of merger fits none of the categories I have described above. It's based on the fact that the single greatest benefit derived from most professional company mergers is the creation of a huge disruption within the merged companies. This disorder creates the conditions to make significant managerial changes that could not politically have been accomplished pre-merger, even if they were then sensible and obvious. Most competitive benefits are obtained by improving a company's approach to such basics as client service, efficiency, innovation, skill development, resource allocation, and collaboration. However, as we've said repeatedly in the seminar series, making such improvements often requires significant changes in organization, accountabilities, measurement and reporting systems, radical changes for which it is often hard to build consensus. It's hard to get people on the diet without a dramatic event. The merger of two companies can become that dramatic event, throwing all the cards up into the air. The newly merged company gets to re-examine its organizational structure, its systems, its choice of group leaders and other managerial roles. Significant changes in how the business is managed can be introduced during this mandatory review. Frequently, newly merged companies introduce new measurement and accountability systems for which it would have been impossible for either company to obtain broad support or approval pre-merger. Another common merger benefit occurs when one of the merging companies has superior client or customer service characteristics or better methodologies or more disciplined management, and the combined entity results in those strong traits prevailing and the weaker company acquiring the superior practices of the strong company. Of course, there's no reason why the weaker company couldn't have implemented better practices on its own, except that without the precipitating crisis, the power to change probably would have been absent. It's sad to report, but a large percentage of professional mergers I have observed have been driven by the need to create some form of crisis before significant changes could be made. It's important to the companies to note that the window of opportunity in making these changes is short, 12 to 18 months. If new revolutionary processes have not been introduced in that time frame, then the chance for radical change is usually missed. So what are the lessons? In spite of the cynicism I've expressed here, I do believe that some mergers can be a wise strategic move for the right company. The principles to observe are relatively few and quite simple. First, make sure you focus on doing something that the clients will value. This means you should concentrate on the operational issue of creating new capabilities. Don't get seduced by the potential marketing benefits of mergers. If your merger allows you to have something new or better to offer the marketplace, then the marketing of that additional capability will follow easily. If all merger benefits are marketing related, be deeply skeptical. Another good rule of thumb is to focus on acquiring talent rather than a client context. Because of the ephemeral nature of cross-selling opportunities, the value of the client relationships are a lot less certain than are the skills of the people. An acquisition should be seen predominantly as a way of acquiring talent or methodologies and tools, not as a way of acquiring clients. A merger is a long-term action, and you should therefore focus more on what it does for your balance sheet and your assets, and a little less what it does immediately for your income statement. It is often said that doing a professional firm merger is like bringing in a very large number of senior lateral officers together with their staff all at once. Amazingly, it's often the case that the due diligence investigation done on an individual lateral senior hire exceeds in thoroughness that done when bringing in a whole company of them. Viewed this way, it's almost always smarter to cherry-pick and raid a small handful of key people to build a business around rather than merge with a whole company. That way, you don't pay a premium, and it's easier to integrate the new team into your way of doing things. It's slower, but it's definitely more trouble-free. The conclusion of this seminar is that a merger will succeed if and only if all the following are true. Number one, you know exactly which clients or customers will derive benefit from the merger. Number two, you know exactly which benefits these are going to be. Number three, you have direct evidence that these clients actually want these benefits. And number four, you have a concrete action plan on exactly how you're going to achieve the extra value for those clients. If you've got all that, go ahead and merge. This concludes Why Merge, the 10th episode in my series, Strategy in Professional Businesses. Upcoming seminars in this series will focus on how companies should add value and how to think about geographic expansion and diversification. Today's seminar was based on a chapter in my book, True Professionalism, details of which can be found on my website at davidmaister.com. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.